Yes, you, listener. Did you know that everybody at History Hack works for free? And as much fun as that is, it would be great if we could garner just a little bit of support for all of the time and effort that goes into producing the show. I have a cat that needs food. Zach has Airfix models to buy. And Boney, well, Boney likes books. So if you can chuck us a couple of quid as a one-off via Ko-fi or subscribe to Patreon, we would much appreciate it. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to today's History Hack. We've got one of our recurring guests today, nay, one of the family, Zach, haven't we?
We have. She's billed regularly as my podcasting wife. It is, of course, the lovely Charlie, Mrs. White. I was going to kind of introduce you as Mistress of Restoration Cake, then I decided that actually maybe that's got the wrong kinds of connotations. You're nobody's mistress other than your own. Charlie's well known with her kind of baking amazing creations. See the Great War Group cake, which was just a thing of beauty. She describes herself as a history buffoon and a nerd. She's a girly swot, I'll give her that, but you're not a buffoon, mate. We're not having that. But you are writing at the moment, aren't you, about Burton and Taylor in Inside History magazine. So I'm guessing that's what we're going to talk about today, some filmy stuff.
We are indeed. Yes, I'm really looking forward to talking to you about Burton and Taylor because it's a love story. But if you are expecting chocolate boxes and roses and a happy ending, I'm afraid you're not getting it. So you're going to have to just buckle in. It's going to be a bumpy ride, but I promise you, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about them.
Can we just say as well, I have to give you, because I may have been drinking with some regular listeners at the weekend who commented, congratulations, Zach, on getting through that intro and mentioning your podcasting wife without mentioning the fact that you've got a girlfriend, because it was referenced in the pub. It was referenced that it has become an every episode thing because Zach has to remind us all that he's got a stunning girlfriend. And I was like, yes, he does. And I'm not going to stop him because he's so cute. But you did
And
get
you
through
know
that.
what? I'm not even sorry.
No, look
Hang
at
on,
the
you've got a
love.
girlfriend.
Yes.
What?
Have we not mentioned this already?
What?
Not in the last 5 minutes. Anyway, how did they meet? Not Zach and his girlfriend. We know how that happened. He forced them together by like clutching the back of their heads and making them like talk to each other at the conference. But how did Burton and Taylor meet, Charlie?
Well, they met on the set of Cleopatra, the budget busting, studio bankrupting epic, which if you haven't seen it, it's worth 3 hours of your life to watch. So Elizabeth Taylor was playing Cleopatra, obviously. She was the first actress to be paid $1 million for a role. So already big budget stuff. And Richard Burton was the second actor cast as Mark Antony. Like I said, there were so many problems with this production that we could do a whole other episode about how this production broke the studio system. If people want to hear it, we will do it. But they were attracted to each other fairly instantly at this point. They would go out for drinks together in the evening, the whole cast and crew, everyone would be out together. They'd got a mutual friend in Roddy McDowall who'd kind of ply them with alcohol and just watch sparks fly and watch all the humor between them. The only problem was is that both of them were married at this time. So, but then Burton's got previous in this. And Richard Burton's arrangement with his long-suffering wife, Sybil, was very much that he would come back to her after each film because he would always sleep with his leading lady. It's just what he did. Elizabeth Taylor's husband wasn't quite so okay with it, Eddie Fisher, but we'll talk more about him later. So they pretty much fell in love straight away. It was incredible to watch, and you can watch it. So they spent months together hanging out before they ever filmed a scene together. But the first scene that they did film together, Burton's Anthony says, everything that I want to hold or love or have or be is here with me now. And she says, it doesn't seem fair what I feel I should have felt long ago when I was very young, when I could say to myself this was how love was and how it would be. And they kiss, and they kiss passionately, and they kissed until the director called cut. And then he kept calling cut, and they kept kissing. And that was pretty much instant deal done. Though people did joke about her because she did have to marry everyone she slept with. So
I'm laughing my head off. I was watching Only Fools and Horses the other day, and you know, there's that one where Del is talking to the gay guy.
Yeah.
They're having this blissfully like charming conversation despite the fact that this guy's massively camp, and he says, I don't follow football, and he's like, oh, Elizabeth Taylor, her eyes, and they'll go, yeah, pity she got fat, isn't it?
Oh, boo. Yeah, there's this incredible thing about her eyes, right? She was born with a genetic mutation, which sounds really, really dramatic. She was born with a double set of eyelashes. How cool is that? She always looked like she was wearing false eyelashes. So she's actually got two sets of eyelashes. And people said that they were so blue that they were almost violet. It's just incredible eyes Elizabeth Taylor had. Yeah, I mean, she's stunning. The weight, yeah, becomes an issue in her life. But hey, who could say that it isn't?
Who hasn't gone through a chubby phase? I don't trust anyone who's never gone through a chubby phase, any woman who's never gone through a chubby phase at some point. There's so many hormones
don't trust them.
Around and life changes and birthing of babies and things. It happens to the body itself. It all sounds very, very romantic and lovely. Possibly not if you're one of the people that they're already married to. So give us her background then. You said she married everyone she ever slept with.
Yes, Elizabeth Taylor was very much the patron saint of weddings, I think it is fair to say. She was married more times than Henry VIII, which is an excellent quiz question. If you ever asked, you know, who was married more, it was Elizabeth Taylor.
Did she behead any of them though? I'd be impressed.
No, she didn't, but she does have a very easy rhyme. So here's the rhyme, just so you never forget. Divorced, divorced, died, divorced, divorced, remarried, divorced, divorced, divorced. So,
oh, it's easier, isn't it?
Easy to remember. Her first marriage was very much to transition her from child star to adult movie goddess. So she'd been a child star at MGM, and she had her big break at the age of 12. And they would do this quite a lot. So they've got, you know, young girls, and all of a sudden they want to start casting them in romantic lead roles. It needs to be okay for the audience to fancy them.
Yeah.
So what they would normally do is they'd send them on well-publicized dates. You know, they'd be photographed and in the press. Oh, look, Elizabeth Taylor, she's out with a college football star. You know, that kind of all-American, very innocent, very wholesome.
Yeah,
kind of deal to make it clear that she's a woman now. Great, that makes sense. But with Elizabeth, she's a little bit confused, I think, between real life and her screen life, and she expected that she would fall in love and get married, because that's what happens in movies. You know, the hero gets the girl, they get married, they live happily ever after. So she married at the age of 18. Very, very young, as she just finished filming Father of the Bride, and her wedding dress was made by the MGM costume department. That's how linked these two things are.
She's completely indoctrinated, isn't she?
Really is. So this is 1950. She's 18 years old, and she marries Nicky Hilton, who is, yes, that Hilton of the hotels. I think he was Paris's great uncle, but yeah, he's a Hilton. And it all looked absolutely perfect from the outside. Unfortunately, Nicky Hilton, pretty much as soon as they were married, started beating her, which is horrific. So she divorced very quickly because, you know, it was really bad from reading about it. She may have even miscarried a child. It was horrendous, especially when she was expecting this very very Hollywood ending.
Yeah. So unsurprisingly, she then goes much older, doesn't she?
She does. She goes much, well, she go, it's like a flip 180.
Yeah.
And she goes for the real father figure, a British actor by the name of Michael Wilding, who she was filming with. And he was, by all sounds of things, quite caring and quite loving. And she has a couple of children by him. And then realizes that there's no passion in her marriage. Now, this is a whole other issue to talk about, the idea of what is passion. But it seemed very much that what she's looking for is Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy rather mm-hmm. than Jane and Mr. Bingley. She doesn't want comfy, happy. She apparently even goaded him during a fight to hit her. So there's a real problem there. But they divorce after 5 years. In 1957, when she meets Mike Todd. He's a film producer, so he is, you know, he's a little bit older. He is a really extravagant personality. He spoils her rotten. He's fun, he's passionate. He introduces her to expensive jewelry for the first time, which she becomes very, very fond of. But he died in 1958 in a plane crash. You just couldn't write it. Apparently she was even meant to be traveling with him, but she was off ill. She was filming, but she got off set because she was unwell and didn't want to be seen going out partying with her husband while she's off. So she wasn't on the plane and he died. She was a widow at 26, which is just horrific to think of. And she finds comfort in her husband's best friend. So like a lot of couples, they've got couple best friends, and their couple best friends are Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds, parents of Carrie Fisher for our Star Wars fans amongst
Chris
us here.
Up and down on his sofa. Yeah,
absolutely. For our Star Wars boys. So Elizabeth and Eddie Fisher get together, and Elizabeth is dragged through the press as a homewrecker, as the whore of Babylon for breaking up this perfect marriage of America's sweetheart, Debbie Reynolds. What people didn't know is that actually Eddie and Debbie had been having problems for years, but it didn't help that Elizabeth Taylor kind of slept with her husband. That never helps. But no. Hedda Hopper asked her about it in the press, and Elizabeth just said, look, my husband's dead, what do you expect me to do, sleep alone? So
yeah,
zero F's given. She, she's pretty subversive, is Elizabeth Taylor. So that's at this point when she meets Richard Burton, she is still married to Eddie Fisher.
But also it takes two to tango, people, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't just happen by magic, it you know, she doesn't just turn on the scene and then miraculously everybody's incapable of containing themselves.
Oh no, he would have fought men in these scenarios. He just tripped over and his penis fell inside her. He was quite innocent.
She tempted him with her wicked female witchcrafty ways.
Evil wicked vagina sucked him in.
They'll do that.
Yeah. Be careful.
Richard Burton, though, what about him? Is he happily married at this point? You know, was it a case of, you know, Elizabeth, that horrific person who just goes around and destroying homes? Was she just a wrecking ball through another relationship, or was he actually just not particularly happily married?
It's, do you know what? I mean, he always said he would never, ever leave Sybil. So they'd married again. They'd married quite young, but and they met while in Wales. She knew him. She understood him. He was from a mining community, came from a very poor family. In fact, his mother died shortly after he was born of what he described as just medical neglect, because they didn't have money and she was pretty much just allowed to slip away. So he'd been raised in this mining community in Wales, and Sybil got him. So as he got into acting, and it turned out he was very good, he was adopted by one of his teachers who just thought he'd got a lot of potential. That's why he was born Richard Jenkins. He took the name Burton after his adopted adopted parent figure. She got him. She'd been through that journey with him. She knew his background. And every time he slept with a leading lady, which he did repeatedly, he would come back to Sybil. And she seemed to accept that. And that was just the arrangement that they had. After everything happens with Cleopatra, and they try to stay away from each other. They really, really do. Sybil just knows that this is different. It's not going to, their marriage isn't going to survive Elizabeth Taylor. Something about her is very different. So they were as happily married as I think they could be. They've got two children, two daughters, and I don't think he wanted to break up his family. I think he really, really struggled with it. And we've got his diaries, which is really interesting. So you can actually read what he was thinking at this time. But nothing could survive this. When you see that kind of energy, that type of chemistry, nothing could stand in that way, unfortunately.
Okay, so going back to Cleopatra, though, and, you know, that famous incident that you mentioned, you know, the director calls cut and they just go, I'm in the moment, you know, come back to us in half an hour sort of thing. What's happening on the set? Where have things got to? You know, presumably there have been more instances like that where they're doing these scenes and they're making out and everyone's just like, can we actually release this legally?
Yeah, the worst kept secret in Hollywood, I think, the Burton and Taylor affair, the press get wind of it. The press and the paparazzi get wind of what is going on. And there's these really famous photographs of them out on a boat together. So there's these big naval battle scenes in Cleopatra. And they're relaxing between takes on a boat. She's in a bikini. He's in trunks. She's putting suntan lotion on his back. And these photos go around the world. It's called La Scandale. And this is where the Pope thinks he should get involved. So the Pope gets involved and deems this erotic vagrancy. So she is called out. Yeah.
Again, that's something I want to be guilty of.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have it written on your headstone. Erotic vagrant. Here lies.
Don't even know what it means, but it sounds cool.
It does sound really good. It's like the kind of thing that you would love to have on your, you know, on your criminal record.
I would Google it, but I'm not sure I want that in my
probably
search history.
Probably not a good idea. Don't put it in your search history.
So, I have just Googled the boat photos and it's hot.
It's hot. Yeah, they are there for all to see. So they're being called out by the Pope. People in Italy are starting to shout, you know, whore and homewrecker at her as she walks through the streets. Congress even discusses at one point not letting them back into the US because they are so dangerous and disgusting and immoral. They really represent this moment where we go from the strict moral codes of the 40s and the 50s, which are upheld by the production code in Hollywood and the Hays Code, and having to have one foot on the floor and all adulterers have to be punished and all of that kind of stuff. And the control that studios had over their stars, in that if they broke their morality clause, they could be suspended. They could be, you know, you could never work again. When a star of the caliber of Elizabeth Taylor is getting away with it again, is doing this again, she's already broken up one family. You're seeing a shift into the sexual liberation of the 60s and the 70s and the end of the studio system, because they no longer have this kind of control over their stars. If they can't police their behavior, then they can't control them. So in Italy, the shit is hitting the fan, let's be honest. So the studio are under pressure because all of this is really bad press. I mean, all publicity is good publicity, right? But this is not looking good. The Vatican are unhappy. Congress is pissed. The press are going absolutely insane. But they keep filming, they keep going, and they keep having this affair. And there is a story about even one night where Elizabeth and Richard are alone, and she's saying that she loves him so much, if she can't be with him, she's going to kill herself. And she took a load of pills in front of him. And he's thinking, this is hilarious. This is a joke.
Drama queen.
Chasing him down with drink. This is going to be a theme that's going to keep coming back, drink and drugs with these two. So she does this, and she has to be rushed to hospital and have her stomach pumped. She really did do it. So, and of course, the publicity is that she had exhaustion and needed some days to recover. But, and it's another reason why Cleopatra costs so much money, because Elizabeth Taylor is ill a lot. But yeah, apparently she did this sort of mad suicide attempt because they were saying, yeah, we have to stop this. We've got to, too many people are getting hurt. We need to stop what we're doing. And they did try, in all fairness, when they wrapped and they both went back to their lives. She'd already announced that she was going to divorce Eddie. She admitted she'd married him out of grief and mutual mourning for Mike Todd. That wasn't working. But as agreed, Richard Burton went back to Sybil, and they tried to stay away from each other. But unfortunately, they just couldn't do it. They started talking on the phone. They were both in Switzerland. They both got lovely properties in Switzerland. And he started driving up to her house to see her. And it was just, that was it. The writing was on the wall.
I'm going to come out and say he's not even that fit.
Oh, mate. I've fallen in love with him. I
didn't realise that one of his daughters from his marriage to Sybil as well is Meredith's mum in Grey's Anatomy. That's Curtin. So Beth will be very excited about that because she's hooked on Grey's at the moment, because I have bludgeoned her into watching it and she's now binging it all day.
That's so interesting. I did not know that. So I'm guessing, yeah, Kate Burton must be her mum. That's so cool. I mean, I was hoping that there would be a sort of grandson around somewhere, Richard Burton Jr., that I could look up, but he was a different, you know, whole different type of guy. I mean, he'd had really bad acne as a teen. He was pockmarked, but he just had, I mean, he had that voice. Everyone just fell in love with this beautiful baritone voice that he'd got. And it's a different type of hot.
So I'm guessing these two divorces cost an absolute fortune.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Eddie Fisher took his share. He took a lot of money. Their divorce had to go through a few iterations before it actually happened. She had to pay him a lot to go away. And on the flip side, Richard Burton actually gave his wife everything. I think he just felt so guilty because he'd always said he would never leave Sib. And he gave her plenty. She actually went away and started a disco club in New York and married a musician and had a really lovely life. So she was like this queen of New York disco. So they get divorced in, what, 1964? So, yeah, it was pretty awesome for Sybil. She did all right. Yeah. But they get married. Yay! Weddings. Nice romantic bit. So they get married in 1964. And the following day, Richard Burton's on stage. He's playing Hamlet in Toronto. And he comes out, like, I think he does like six curtain calls. He keeps coming. The public are mental for them. They're mental for this whole story. This has all been played out in the press. And he comes out for his last curtain call. And in a quote from Hamlet, he says, "We will have no more marriages." And it brings the house down and they go mad for him. But the public are completely obsessed with anything Burton and Taylor. And they get mobbed. They get completely mobbed. They fly from Toronto to Boston. There's 3,500 fans waiting for them when they land. And then when they get to their hotel, the fans follow them there. And they're so excited that Burton and Taylor are in this hotel that they rip them apart. They pull their clothes apart. They pull their hair out. Apparently, Elizabeth's handbag's being kicked around the floor like a football. These are fans. It's just
terrifying,
isn't it scary? It's really, then, really scary.
They then go off and make a bucket load of films together.
Yeah. So they know they've got a product that the public want, and they repeatedly give it to them. So they make, I think they make a total of 10 feature films together. And that doesn't include when they appeared on stage together, doesn't include TV films. So they did lots and lots of stuff together. So they do The Taming of the Shrew, which is just playing up to their relationship and their sort of quite combative relationship that they have, which is quite sort of feisty. So he plays Petruchio and she plays Kate, and it's completely mad. I totally recommend that. They make a rather ill-advised film version of Dr. Faustus, which was not very well received. And perhaps the most famous film they made together was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, for which she won an Oscar. And they play a couple who are drunk and argumentative, and yeah, it's a, and sort of they need each other, but they are, you know, the kind of couple that if you were friends with, you just wouldn't want to go around their house. Awkward. They're gonna fight again, they're gonna get pissed and fight again. Oh no. But that's, yeah, the public wanted that. They wanted Burton and Taylor. They joked that they were like Laurel and Hardy, so they just did everything together. Yeah.
Let's keep digging on the kind of it's not perfect element, because you talk about the fighting. There's a lot more besides the fighting, isn't there?
Yeah. So the alcohol and the drugs is a big thing with them. Physical fights, actually, you know, properly going at each other, and not just in private, in public as well. They would get drunk and they would just pick at each other. They both suffered, bizarrely, just, you know, by coincidence, they both suffered from really bad back pain. So Elizabeth fell off a horse when she was 12, and she was filming National Velvet, which is a film about a girl who rides a horse, and did her back. And Richard had terrible back pain from playing rugby, because he's Welsh. You have to play rugby. In fact, whenever Wales were playing rugby, he would have somebody at the side of the stage or at the side of set, like signalling to him what the scores were. So he would always have, and he refused to work on St. David's Day. So it was always written into his contract. He was a very, very proud Welshman. But he had a terrible back from that. He also got beaten up at Paddington Station. Get about this time, very early in their relationship, he got beaten up just by some thugs, and he had terrible, terrible back pain. Now, he would not go and see a doctor. He was one of these guys, and guys, please don't be that guy. He would never go and see a doctor, so he self-medicated when he was in pain with alcohol. She would love to go to the hospital. She would always go to the hospital. She had a lot of doctors who would treat her and just give her pills. And this is something in Hollywood that we still see today. It's like, if you're a big star, here, have some pills, have painkillers, have anything you need. And she would chase them with alcohol. So it was a really bad combination that the two of them had. In fact, it's pop psychology, but this is an interesting argument about Elizabeth Taylor and her particular view. She realized very early on that the only real control she had over whether she worked or whether she didn't work was being ill. Mm. And they actually wonder if, well, they wonder if she perhaps made herself ill psychologically. So it was like a psychosomatic.
Yeah.
Because then she could have a day off work. Because, you know, the studio machine, she would be filming constantly. But then there are entries in Richard's diaries which reveal illnesses that she certainly couldn't be faking, and certainly couldn't be bringing on herself. And it sounds awful. She had nasty piles at one point. It just sounded awful. But so painkillers, alcohol, it's a bad combination.
What's the final straw then for the Burton-Taylor marriage? What kind of completely scuppers it?
Well, they managed to go for quite a long time in this way. you know, fighting, making up, fighting, making up, beating each other up, making up. And Richard really wore his love and his fidelity to Elizabeth like something of a badge of honor. The way he looked at it is that if he was going to explode his marriage to Sybil, it was going to be forever. And that was the thing. So he really, really didn't want to ever leave Elizabeth. When he started looking at other women, he realized that something was wrong. Now, she'd been very jealous of Sophia Loren. I mean, who wouldn't be? She's freaking gorgeous. And only took a role in a particular film that she did with Richard called The Comedians because it was going to go to Sophia. And she just didn't want him to have time alone with her, so she took the role. She was really, really jealous of Genevieve Bujold, who played Anne Boleyn against Burton's Henry VIII in Anne of a Thousand Days. She was really jealous of her, not only because Richard was clearly fond of her and gave her a little nickname and everything, but because that should have been Elizabeth's role. But Elizabeth, by this point, was too old to play Anne Boleyn. And that is, I mean, in terms of insecurities as an actress, to be told you're too old to play opposite your husband, and he's fine. He can keep playing, yeah, playing the romantic lead until he croaks, until he falls apart. But sorry, love, you're over 30. So no one's going to believe that someone fancies you. So come on, this is just crazy. She has an uncredited role in that film, though, as one of Anne's ladies in waiting because she was keeping an eye on him. So look out for her. She is there. It is true. It's absolutely true. So the early 1970s is a real decline in their relationship. So they've spent the 60s being just, you know, the Burton Taylors. Crazy drink, drugs, and all the excesses that came with them as a Hollywood couple. They had the jet, they had the yacht, they got jewelry, so much jewelry. He loved buying her jewelry. It was a pleasure for him to do it. And he spent millions on these incredibly rare, expensive pieces. Mm. The fine art, everything about them was just excess. So after the 60s, when we go into the 70s, it's really going downhill. There's more drugs, more alcohol, more fighting. And when she turned 40 in February 72, they made a TV film called Divorce Him, Divorce Hers, which was a two-parter, a divorce shown from his perspective and a divorce from her perspective. And it always, art always, mimicked life, and they got divorced.
So that's like the worst concept for a film ever.
That's terrible. It's just, I've got it and I haven't been able to bear watching it yet. I can't even do it, because there's something wonderful about when you watch their first scene in Cleopatra together, and you get when you know the little hairs stand up on the back of your arms, and you think, oh my god, I wouldn't want to be married to either of them and have to watch this, because this is hot. Like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, when you see Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, and you're like, mate, there's something going on there. This is beautiful. So I almost can't bear to watch the moment when they are actually getting divorced. But they did. July 73, Elizabeth issued a public statement. This is really remarkable. So she goes to the press, because they live their whole relationship in public. She goes to the press and she says, she explains their reasons for separating. And this is great. She says, maybe we loved each other too much. I never believed such a thing was possible, but we've been in each other's pockets constantly, never apart but for matters of life and death. And I believe it's caused a temporary breakdown of communication. And then she goes on to say that she's hoping they'll end up getting back together. She says she's going to spend time with her mother and her friends. She says friends are there to help each other, aren't they? Isn't that what it's all supposed to be about? Wish us well during this difficult time. Pray for us. I mean, this is
not normal for this period. I mean, now you could go straight on Twitter with all that nonsense and that. But there is no Twitter.
No, these guys are pre-breaking the internet. I mean, how many times do you think these two would have broken the internet if they were around now? I mean, this year, we are 60 years away from 1962. So they met 60 years ago this year. This is when this all starts kicking off. To think about, yeah, how completely the world has changed since Burton and Taylor got together. But yeah, a statement, yeah, conscious uncoupling. Yeah. That was one of Paltrow's. It reminds me of that. It's just remarkable. Crazy.
It is mental. But so that's the end of the story then. It's not the end of the story at all, is it?
It's not finished. No. They can't
be done with each other, can they? What happens?
Well, she calls him the next day saying, do you think we've done the right thing? And they go out for dinner for their 10th wedding anniversary. So they're not actually divorced yet. So they're not divorced. They go out for their 10th wedding anniversary in March 74, and Richard starts flirting with a couple of waitresses very loudly, very publicly. And we've got lots of eyewitnesses, lots of people who actually told their story after the fact. And someone says that he actually said to Elizabeth, you know, now that's a girl I could take home and fuck. And that's horrendous. It's a horrendous thing to say to your wife. And she storms out and goes off, and he invites the girls back to his hotel room. They politely decline because they're like 20-year-old waitresses. And this is a guy in his 40s who they're not.
He's just been stabbed with a butter knife by his wife on her way out.
Exactly. Awkward. So in June 74, Elizabeth goes to court and they get a divorce. Richard's too ill to attend. He's got a fever at the time. But he just let her have everything. He let her have all of the jewels, all of the properties, all the yacht, the art. And he just said, who cares?
He just doesn't seem very materialistic. That's twice he's done that now.
He really just goes. All he really wants, this is the thing about Richard Burton, when you read his diaries, all he wanted was his books. She gave him the Everyman Library. It was a collection of 1,000 books. And he just loved to read. That's all he did. He was a voracious reader. He would read constantly. He'd read everything. And he wanted to be a writer. I think he was a frustrated writer trapped in the body of a Hollywood actor. But he didn't want anything. He didn't want any of that. Within hours of them getting divorced, he was on the phone to him again saying, do you think we did the right thing? And they meet up again the following year. So it's a year later. They see each other in Switzerland. And Richard says, for 2 days we circled each other, very wary, very polite. On the third day we had a fight. Then we knew we were ourselves again.
And they're idiots, really, aren't they?
Yeah, it's crazy. They got engaged 2 days after that, and they got married again in October 1975 in Botswana. So they did remarry. They were like, we did the wrong thing, we have to be together, so let's get married again.
And then everything was great?
Nope. No, he wasn't the man she married in 1964. When she married him again in 1975, he was starting to look old and starting to be quite frail. And he was destroying himself with alcohol, basically. They continued to fight. And by Christmas that year, so they get married in October. By Christmas, he'd met a 27-year-old blonde in Switzerland.
Richard, no, don't be that guy.
Stay away from blondes. he didn't even bother trying to hide this from Elizabeth. When he left for New York to start rehearsing Equus in January, he took Susie Hunt, his girlfriend, with him, and the Burton Taylors were granted their second divorce before the end of July in 1976. So it's all very, very quick, these things happening within months. Can you imagine being their friend?
Don't do it. Don't make me slap you.
Don't get married again, you crazy, crazy people.
So, final divorce. That's looming. I mean, if they're falling apart by Christmas, then it's inevitable, right? What how does that go? And then, you know, what's the sequel to that? Where do they go in terms of their separate ways?
Well, Elizabeth goes and marries a Republican politician called William Warner Jr. They get married in December 1976. So she's divorced in July 76. She is married in December 76. Remember, she has to marry every man she sleeps with. This is Elizabeth and how she works. He goes on the campaign trail for a Senate seat. So she is suddenly a candidate's wife. So she's doing the campaign trail. She's, you know, all kissing babies and standing next to him and looking demure and not like a Hollywood star at all. But by the time he actually wins his seat in November 78, their relationship's pretty much over. She's really unhappy. She's not herself. She's not Elizabeth Taylor. She's just not acting. She's not
the center of attention.
She's not the center of attention, but she is not.
She's a child, to be fair to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, that is what she was built to do. She was built to be a star. And she's numbing her pain and her depression with alcohol and drugs and food. Now, this is where we start getting on to Elizabeth Taylor and her weight gain. This is when it becomes really out of control. She doesn't feel like herself. She doesn't look like herself. She's deeply unhappy. And she has that moment where she looks at herself in the mirror without any clothes on and says, right, I need to sort myself out. So she goes on a proper weight loss regime and signs up to do a play. She decides she's going to do a play on Broadway called The Little Foxes. And by the time it premieres in February 1981, she's dropped all the weight and she's dropped the husband. And Elizabeth Taylor is back. Huzzah.
Yeah, huzzah.
Yeah, that's what we like.
So how does it work out with Susie?
Yeah, that doesn't really work out.
Imagine my surprise.
The reality of being married to an aging alcoholic, I think, is not particularly nice. And no one used the word alcoholic then. Remember, you were a drunk. This was not a disease. This was not something that needed help. This was you're a drunk. You fall down, you sort yourself out. So when she left him, again, Richard Burton did what Richard Burton does, and he sort of said, look, no hard feelings, take what you want, off you go. And he didn't fight her on it. So yeah, that didn't really work out. He'd been taking some really physically demanding roles, because remember, this is a Welsh rugby playing man's man, Richard Burton. He was taking some very physically demanding roles, and he was in so much pain now with his back and refusing to go to the doctor that his right arm was pretty much useless, and he couldn't lift his left arm above the shoulder, and he still wouldn't get help for it. So it was really, really bad. He's numbing the pain with alcohol rather than treating the symptoms. Now, Elizabeth comes to London in February 1982 with The Little Foxes, which had been a big hit on Broadway. And the first thing she does when she gets to London is she calls Richard and they meet up. They're both freshly divorced. They both got a lot to bitch about together. And she asks him to appear in Noel Coward's Private Lives with her. She thinks this is a really good idea.
Oh, no. No, no, no,
no.
You can just see the writing on the wall, can't you? Please tell me it goes well. Please tell me that Private Lives, you know, they do really well in this play. It receives critical acclaim, and then they just go their separate ways.
Okay.
It doesn't, does it?
Private Lives is a play about a divorced couple who are honeymooning with their new partners and realize that they still really fancy each other. So,
oh, for goodness sake, what is wrong with these two people?
Well, she's smart. The thing is, she realizes that the public still love the Burton Taylors, and that is exactly what they want to see. They want to see this played out in front of them. They want to see them together and unable to take their hands off each other with dialogue written by Noel Coward. I mean, I can't imagine anything more perfect. I would have bought a ticket. I would have been front row and center for this. So they're playing up to their image, they're playing up to their reputation, and they're playing up to the publicity of it all. Now, it's a really fraught production, unfortunately, because originally, when Richard said yes, he thought they were making a film. Then it turned into, no, we're going to do a place. We have to do it night after night after night. And then, oh, no, we're not just going to do it in London. We're going to tour it. So he was in for, I think, about 10 months of fighting and falling in love with Elizabeth night after night after night. And this gets scary. Now, he gets an offer from John Huston, amazing director, to come and do a film with him. And he says to Elizabeth, look, I've got this amazing opportunity here to be in this film. And she says, you're not going. You're contracted. I'm afraid you have to keep working with me for like 10 months, Richard, because she really wants him back. And everybody knows she's not making a secret of this. She is after her man. Now, Richard's so pissed off with her for refusing him the chance to go and do this film that he goes off to Vegas and marries his girlfriend.
What, they're both such fuck ups.
I mean, the thing is, I've been reading two books, so Burton based on his diaries and one about Elizabeth, and it does seem very much that the timing adds up, that he had a weekend off and he flew off and married his girlfriend, and that was a real signal to Elizabeth that I'm not your man, you can't have me. And she still loved him.
She wants him back, doesn't she?
She wants him back. She wants a man. She loved him. She loved him till the day he died, which he did. And he did suddenly on the 5th of August, 1984. Done. Finished.
What happened?
He had a brain hemorrhage in his sleep. So his wife put him to bed. He complained of a headache, gave him a cup of paracetamol, went to bed, and in the morning he just couldn't wake properly, so she took him to the hospital. He was still alive and with it a bit, but by the time the hospital said, look, we're gonna have to operate, by the time she got home, when they were going to operate, they actually phoned and said, sorry, he's died. And he wrote a diary, and the last thing he wrote by the side of his bed was tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, all our revels are ended, which is Shakespeare, Macbeth, but it's just so heartbreaking. He was only 58. Just that was it. He was gone.
Really hadn't looked after himself. And she actually, what's her reaction? Because she's engaged again when he dies. So how does she react?
Badly. So yes, she got engaged shortly after Richard got married in Vegas to a guy called Victor Luna, who had all the right stuff on paper, money, liked to spoil her, crazy about her. But she completely cracked up when he called. When she got the news. Now, thankfully, she had just been in the Betty Ford Clinic before this happened. So after Private Lives ended in November 83, her family staged an intervention and they said, look, you got to sort yourself out. You're taking so many drugs and you're drinking so much that you're going to kill yourself. So off she goes to the Betty Ford Clinic. And so she was in as good a place as she could possibly be. She gets the call the day after Richard's died, and Victor Luna recalled that she fainted. She became hysterical. He couldn't stop her crying. And he realized in that moment that she was never going to be over Richard. And so he, apparently he decided at that point that he was not going to marry her. I hope he didn't tell her at that point that he wasn't going to marry her, but he decided that that wasn't going to happen. The most heartbreaking thing about the Burton Taylor story is that Elizabeth wasn't allowed to attend either his funeral or the memorial service for him held in Wales. His wife felt that Elizabeth would bring too much press attention and turn it into a media circus, which may be right, may be wrong. But later on, Sally Burton actually said that she felt she'd done the wrong thing in not allowing Elizabeth to attend. So he was buried in Switzerland. That's where he died. He died in Switzerland. He was buried in Switzerland. And Elizabeth knew that he wanted to be buried in Wales. He didn't want to be there. And so she'd been married to him for so long. She'd known him for so long. So she was really upset about that. But she goes to visit his grave and pay her respects. And the paparazzi are waiting for her, as you can imagine. But the paparazzi are so nasty. They're not only waiting in the cemetery where he is buried. They're waiting in the cemetery where he is not buried, which just happens to be where she goes. And she's looking for his grave and can't find him. And the pictures of her looking for her ex-husband's grave in the wrong cemetery go around the world, almost as a joke, which is just appalling. Nasty, but hopefully someone got to put their kids through college on that. Isn't it? It really breaks my heart. She should have been able to say goodbye to him. I think whatever you thought of her and about their relationship, she deserved at least that much, which was pretty awful. But she threw herself into a really good cause to get over this. So
indeed. She did indeed, didn't she? So we're talking about AIDS research and awareness.
Yeah. So no one at this point in the early 80s was talking about AIDS other than as, and I'm using quotation marks here, other than gay cancer. Mm. And nobody wanted to put their head up and say, I'm here to be the face of AIDS, because nobody wanted to be kind of tarred by it, or that it would be this horrible sort of terrible thing against them that they were prepared to talk about this awful thing that was happening to gay people. But she did. She knew. Let's face it, she'd been in Hollywood since the 1940s.
She's met a few gay people in Hollywood.
A few gay people. That I hate to break this to people, in the creative industries, there are a few people who are not heterosexual floating around.
Zach's face is like, mind blown.
Just a few of them. Now, she gets really involved in raising money for AIDS awareness and AIDS research. And when her friend Rock Hudson was dying, so very famous actor Rock Hudson, who was a closeted homosexual, he had AIDS and he died of pneumonia in Paris. So it wasn't known at the time that it was AIDS. She took a mutual friend to go and visit him, President Ronald Reagan, because he'd been an actor too. And again, whatever you think of Reagan, he went to see Rock Hudson with Elizabeth Taylor, and he was the first world leader to actually mention the word AIDS in public. The word came out of his mouth, and he was not immediately struck down by righteous lightning, or he suddenly turned gay or anything. He acknowledged that AIDS was a disease that needed to be fought, and he went to Congress, he went to the Senate, and he said, we need to allocate money to AIDS research and AIDS awareness. Now, it feels like a bit of a stretch, but I do think it is entirely fair to say that without a star of Elizabeth Taylor's caliber coming out and talking about AIDS, we would not be where we are now. It would have put everything back. If people were still ashamed to even mention the word in power, in positions of power, we would not be where we are now. So she's an incredible thing, Elizabeth Taylor, and she really did. This happened at that particular moment in time. So a real legacy of heartbreak there that she did.
And then she dies in 2011, right?
She lived a good long life, actually, for someone so sick. I mean, the number of times Elizabeth Taylor was hospitalized at the point of death in her life, several. I can't even, there's no point, there wasn't even any point in me going and listing these in this piece, because it's just, there's just so many. She's in and out of hospital like you would not believe. But she lived till 79, and it was heart failure that got her in the end. But when she was buried in 2011, she was buried with Richard's last letter to her. That was her wishes. She never revealed what he wrote in his last letter to her, but she was buried with it. So it was obviously very special to her. And in just a totally Elizabeth Taylor ballsy move, and I love this so much, she was 15 minutes late. She instructed in her will that her service should start 15 minutes late because she wanted to be late to her own funeral. I mean, how cool is she?
I love that. I absolutely love that. Of all the things, that's going to be the thing that's going to stick with me forever, that she insisted on being late to her own funeral because she was that kind of woman. You can imagine
the number of times she was late on set and someone said, "You'll be late to your own funeral." And she took that. And there's sometimes something about someone and you hear it and you feel like everything else gets unlocked. And once you know that about her, she was funny. She knew herself. She knew her faults. And she just didn't care. She did not care. But these two continue to fascinate. I mean, like I say, we're 60 years on from when they first met now. They're a real product of another time, Burton and Taylor. And people are still fascinated with them. For all the heartache, for all the drama, they loved each other completely. For those of us that are left behind in perfectly functioning, very happy relationships, not looking at this thinking this is anything to aspire to, you can still watch them over and over, falling in love over and over again in Cleopatra. You can watch the battling Burtons in Taming of the Shrew. You can watch them drunk and picking at each other in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. They'll never die. They'll always be there.
Charlie, we love you. Genuinely, we absolutely love you. There are those moments when you just get somebody who's so bloody passionate. It's unreal. And it puts certainly people like me to shame. Thank you for that. That was absolutely brilliant. Your cake stuff. I mean, if you were that passionate about Burton and Taylor, how passionate are you about cake? How can people find out about your cakey stuff? And also, can you give us any kind of little spoilers about what you're writing? Because you are an author right now.
Yes, I am. The official job title I have is author and presenter, which I think is quite lovely. I'm on social media, all social media platforms, as Restoration Cake. I will share a cake that I made in my second book, Deliciously Decorated, where I did make a wedding cake for the Burton Taylors, because I would have loved to have done that. I'd love to have made them a cake. But I'm working on not only this fabulous article for Inside History magazine, which is probably out now, so check out Inside History. It's a fantastic mag. I'm working on a project with Alex. We've got a project in common.
We have indeed.
We're working on our essays for the wonderful Mr. Ian Dale and his Kings and Queens project.
So. Yeah, I get to try and squidge as much of Queen Victoria's nutty parenting in as I possibly can in a few thousand words.
That's and just insane.
Nobody will be surprised to know which monarch you've ended up with.
Oh, I've got Charlie Boy, Charles II, boop, boop. But yeah, I'm so... Do you know what? Actually, writing about the Burton Taylors has really, really helped me, because I've been working on a historical novel about Charles and Barbara Villiers. And actually, here's a little insight for you. Whenever I've described Barbara Villiers, I've been working with the idea of Elizabeth Taylor. It's always been her. If I could cast those two, if he was taller, he'd be a perfect Charles. He's a bit too short.
And can we cast 40-year-old Elizabeth Taylor as Barbara Villiers? Because women don't die at that age. And they're not totally useless to society.
Oh, Hollywood is evil to women, but you know, we know that. But she was, I have to say, she was a proper baller in that system. Apparently she, as a teen, told Louis B. Mayer to get stuffed, which is no one did that. But that might have just been her own little legend that she made about herself. She was incredible.
Charlie, like I say, we love you. Thank you so, so much.
When our guests join us to talk about their work and their new book, the 45 minutes or so they spend with us is just a taster of all their efforts. So to this end, we have launched our very own bookshop on bookshop.org, where you can find our guests' latest and greatest books. You can support them and you can support History Hack too. 10% of every sale via our bookshop supports the podcast and allows us to keep at it and bring you more amazing guests. You can find our bookshop at bookshop.org/shop/History Hack, or just search on bookshop.org for us under the shops bit. Thank you for your continued support, and here's to your next great book.